Hello and welcome to the Leaders in Tech and E-commerce podcast. I'm your host, Rushit Shah, and I'm also Regional Director at Elcott Global, responsible for executive search and consulting business in Asia Pacific. Our mission is to connect the tech in supply chain and e-commerce ecosystem globally by bringing forward some of the interesting stories about success and failures from leaders in industry. Today, we have Philip Otwin, co-founder and managing director of InstaFreight. InstaFreight is the fastest growing logtech company that revolutionized how road freight are done today. They've recently secured a whopping $40 million Series B funding, and we'll talk more about InstaFreight, but let us welcome Philip to the podcast series. Philip, welcome, and thank you so much for your time.
Hey, Rushit, thanks a lot for having me. It's actually a great pleasure.
You know I told you this before we started recording, but I really love your name and I want to keep this in the record. I think this is going to be the most catchiest name. Anybody hearing it, nobody's going to forget it. InstaFreight, that's amazing. So let's talk about, you know, our audience is going to be really interested to know how did the idea of InstaFreight, not just the name, but the whole company originated and how did you become part of it?
Yes. Well, that's actually a very good question. I mean, at the end of the day, it started off back in 2016. And maybe a little bit of a background here. I mean, I studied business. I found my first startup actually during my studies, which was more of a B2C venture, finished off my studies and then went into consulting and seeing industries that were about to be disrupted. That was back in 2011. That's actually quite some time ago. And if you remember, like the finance industry certainly was facing quite a lot of challenges with new players, like hitting the market, such as in N26, I think entering the market in 2013 or so. And then suddenly you sit there at Deutsche Bank and try to answer, okay, so what does it mean for your business model? And I was completely intrigued by the idea of not necessarily being the defender, but being the attacker, if you want, in a very positive way. But for me, when I left Bain end of 2015, it was not finance, but what really intrigued me was in fact logistics. Because it's, I think, one of the largest markets out there, which is still working as they worked. And this might be a bit provocative, but like 50 years ago. And what we wanted to do back in 2016 then was to bring this ease and click and buy experience that, you know, from e-commerce, bring this into logistics. So we were, I would say, the first, like putting up a website, quoting prices for full truckloads, part loads, grouped shipments instantly. A binding offer, which everyone called us crazy for. This is how we hit the road back in 2016, making the road freight market more easily accessible to shippers. And I still remember in 2017, there's a huge congress over here in Germany, actually one of the largest in Europe as well, where we were on stage with DHL, one of the big incumbents. We basically compared the models, what we do at InstaFreight and what DHL does. And like almost the entire audience was calling us crazy that we put out prices there. First of all, being so transparent about it. Second, putting prices which are binding, not knowing what the actual price in the market is going to be. But at the end of the day, I think the proof to the point that this really is part of the future in this industry. Today, if you look at those websites of a DHL, of a DB Schenker, of a Kuhn & Nagel, suddenly you find this almost as an industry standard. So this is where we really see, and this is really what makes us proud, that you managed to bring change to that industry. And this is why we founded InstaFreight back in 2016.
That's an amazing story. And what was back then and what is now? Can you kind of just tell us exactly the kind of scale of the business, let's say in 2017, 2018, and what is it now in 2022?
Yeah. I mean, we started off, I think, in a very traditional way. There was basically two guys on the desk, a few interns. And we were like, first of all, trying to understand the industry and like how that really works, right? And this is also where talent then plays a big role. I mean, we had like one of our first hires was someone with a very deep logistics experience. By the way, this guy is still with us. When we hired him, I think he was 58 or 59. Now he's almost about to retire. And he brought in a lot of logistics experience. I mean, you definitely need the people knowing how that industry works. Because at the end of the day, we're not selling shoes or so, but we are actually running supply chains for our customers. So you better know what you're doing. But at the same time, obviously, you also want to bring change and you want to think differently. So we brought on like what we call young guns, so people straight out of university to challenge how things are being done. And like one of the first questions that we had to answer as for any marketplace that you set up is like how to solve chicken egg. So what we did is we went off to shippers, tried to get into tenders, tried to get some loads and price them in order to test the market. And then once we had the load, we went to the supply side, meaning the carriers, trying to find carriers, which was like a horrendous job back in the days. I mean, if you had like 5 loads a day or so for the entire company, if you want, I mean, we were like 4 or 5 people, then this was already quite a journey. Those of you who are working logistically, sure, you're now smiling because that's not really the efficiency that you typically see at a freight forwarding company. But obviously we need to learn like how to do things. Right now, or like we basically then started building the platform, we started hiring tech talent. So we invested very early in building a platform that can scale. Because at the end of the day, what we wanted to do is we wanted to automate as much as possible from a transport order, meaning there are transport requests coming in. We wanted to price those automatically. Those were not coming in via email or so, but ideally via our website. Today, like some of our customers are connected by APIs, et cetera. But at the end of the day, there should have been a digital data entry, if you want. We wanted then to match the load automatically to carriers that are capable of doing this particular job. We wanted to trace the trucks, not because of like showing a truck on a map, but we wanted to be as efficient as possible, meaning our dispatchers. I mean, we obviously still have people sitting here as we are the contractual party to the shipper. We are the contractual party to the carrier. We have an obligation to make sure that things run smoothly, but obviously we wanted to have our people as efficient as possible. So by knowing where the trucks are, independent of whether these are charter trucks or any truck that we find on a freight exchange, we wanted to have those traceable to understand, like, is the truck on time, yes or no, or where do we might have to interfere manually. And then all the way through to like payment settlements, an end-to-end process, you can say, that allows us to push shipments in a highly automated manner. So this is what we started very early, as I said, like back in 2016, built the product over time. And then in 2019, 2020, we added another service. So we started off as a freight forwarder on a certain, like on a platform that allows us to scale. On the same platform that we have, we now run what we call transport management or managed transportation, whatever you want to call it. At the end of the day, it's a 4PL. The key difference here is that we onboard the existing logistics service providers of our customers onto the platform and do exactly the same thing. We digitize and automate the entire process, but on behalf of our customer. So at the end of the day, as I said, it's a 4PL solution to our customers. Right now, this is actually making also a major chunk of our business. Right now, we are around 230-ish people working out of Berlin, which is our headquarter. We have 2 offices in Poland, 1 office in Latvia, and those are where we have more operational people. And then in terms of sales, we try to be as close to the customer as possible. So you would find us not with official offices, but you would find us in Italy, in Spain, in the Benelux. So basically doing business all across Europe.
Is Europe the focus for now, or do you plan to expand to Northern America, Asia?
That's, again, a very good question. In terms of technology, you can basically go anywhere. The thing is, like, why to do this now? I mean, at some point, I mean, never say no, right? But I mean, at some point, this might come. But for now, the clear focus is in Europe. Any synergies in terms of the network that we build? I mean, we built a network of carrier companies, just like to put some numbers here. The market in Europe is around 350 billion euro in size. The vast majority of trucking companies are super small. So in total, you have around 770,000 to 800,000 trucking companies. On average, they have 6 trucks. What we have done so far is we had around 25,000 carrier companies that we've already done business with, that we have vetted, that we know the fleet composition, we know where they're operating. And this network that we've built, if we now say we start Interfreight in Northern America or in China or wherever, this sort of like lever wouldn't exist anymore, right? So any synergies we can't really take from that. Technology-wise, it does work. We actually do have a company that is using our technology in Australia, but Interfreight is going to stay in Europe for now.
For you, the focus right now, what percentage is really operational freight forwarding and what percentage is really the technology side where you want to grow that business? I'm assuming the revenue right now is more on the freight forwarding rather than TMS.
Yes, it is not a TMS as like a pure software. Yeah. I mean, yeah. Also as this 4PL, if you want, we are the contractual party. So we manage the entire freight spend. But right now you could say that roughly 30% of our business is coming from transport management, meaning the 4PL.
Yeah.
And the other 2/3 is coming from freight forwarding. I think in terms of like logical sequence, mm-hmm. I think, which is pretty obvious, I'm not telling a secret, there's also going to be a pure play software solution of Interfreight in the future, but this is not for now yet.
Awesome. What's one problem, let's say, you know, you are trying to solve now, especially, you know, with this pandemic turning into endemic, do you see that there's something you want to work against? Is there a problem you're trying to solve?
I mean, there are so many market forces right now happening. I mean, you were mentioning the pandemic, which is now already, I think, the second birthday, pretty much on the day. I mean, I think the shutdown in Germany was around the 15th of March, 2020. There is now with the Ukraine, this crisis, like oil prices going up like crazy. I mean, now they went down again, but somehow the diesel price is still at like record heights. So this market is going through significant changes and turbulences. For a startup, or like eventually even for any freight forwarding company out there, this is typically also times of big opportunities. For us, it is to give reliable access at reasonable cost to our shippers. And with access to capacity, I mean, giving access to our trucking network, enabling shippers to find this capacity directly at the carriers, those guys who essentially control the assets. And the infrastructure that we've built really allows us to do this and enable a shipper to not only work with, I don't know, 10, 20, 50, 100 freight forwarders or so, but directly go where the asset is and work with hundreds and thousands of carriers directly, with us being the party in between, if you want, that helps the shipper to orchestrate. And I think this is where we add the biggest value right now, helping customers and helping shippers to navigate in this uncertainty and build more resilience.
It's amazing that you're actually competing with 3PL companies, but you're also providing services to the 3PL companies.
We are providing services to the shipper. The shippers, I mean, our customer is the shipper, could be the whatever, the Coca-Cola, the IKEA of this world, to name it just like a few big names. I mean, right now it's like almost 3,000 customers. So obviously there's also a certain long tail. And then we work typically with the carrier companies, mid-sized companies, having some 20, 50, 100 trucks or so, also some smaller ones. But obviously we also, for some parts of the business, in particular, if we work as the transport management partner, we obviously also work with 3PL companies as the suppliers to our system. I mean, simply because those are the guys that shippers have contracts with. And obviously, if they're performing well, if they perform this at a good quality cost ratio, we definitely keep them in the game, but always provide the shipper the opportunity to find additional solutions.
Awesome. And because we spoke about customers, would you be comfortable kind of sharing some success stories with, you know, one or two of your customers?
Yeah, I think like one of the customers that comes to my mind is one of the first customers in our transport management. That was actually really nice to see. I mean, they had significant problems with visibility and in particular in the inbound transportation. So as like when we started, a company called Vitra, I don't know if that rings a bell, is a quite the high
VITRA or
VITRA. VITRA. Yeah. Vitra is a Germany-Swiss based high quality furniture manufacturer, actually quite well known in this particular industry. And they were having problems in terms of visibility and how they worked with their existing logistics service providers, which still was fairly manual. They didn't really have visibility on their inbound logistics. And what we have done, I mean, this was step one, right? So what we've done back in 2020, I think it was, we first onboarded the existing logistics service providers that they were using for the inbound transportation. So as a first step, we then brought visibility into the whole game by not only bringing on the LSPs, but by also connecting to the respective suppliers. So like part of the equation, and this is also where we are particularly strong at, is to enable suppliers to book shipments, then depending on the Incoterms, so that the carriers or the freight forwarders know where and when to pick up stuff. And in particular, that Vitra is our customer for the inbound, suddenly sees what inbound flows they really have. Before, what was happening, I mean, yes, they had their suppliers. The suppliers were booking with some transportation company, some of them that they knew themselves, and suddenly Vitra was in the inbound logistic. Okay, hang on, there's another truck coming. No idea where this is coming from. They had no visibility around what is actually in the truck. Is it really the full order that they wanted to have? So right now, this is not yet fully implemented, but we are even working on like item level detail for the entire inbound logistics. So this was step one, what we've done. What we're now working with them on, as this really works quite smoothly, we've started onboarding the outbound business as well. And then at the same time, including their customers in this journey. So connected to them as well. And really, and I think this sums it up quite nicely, making logistics a competitive advantage of Vitra. I mean, the idea is then that the recipients, and which might sound normal in B2C, but it's not in B2B, that the recipients receive information on when their load is going to arrive, like what is inside, etc. So this is right now what we're working on. So this was how we started off with Vitra. What might also be interesting compared to other 4PL players, I mean, obviously 4PL is not a concept that Instafreight invented, but I think we are amongst the first and only ones in Europe having an underlying platform business model to this and really leveraging technology for this. And this you clearly see in how we onboard business. As a traditional 4PL player, I mean, not all are the same, I know, but traditionally what you see is that you first run a consulting project, you try to understand the supply chain, it takes you a few months, like up to a year, and then you get your potential cost savings. And then either someone else is implementing this after the consultants leave, but at least it's taking you a long time. What we are doing is we go out there and say, look, we just onboard what you have. Oftentimes, the customers don't really have the data themselves. So we enable them to collect data first about their supply chain. So we onboard the providers, we start operating the business, we start collecting data, first typically in a pilot setup, and then we roll it out. And this takes a week, maybe 2 weeks to be productive. And this is something like almost plug and play without any IT involvement on the shipper side. Is something that typically shippers or like people responsible for the supply chain really like. Because I mean, like once it becomes an IT project, timelines become very long. And yeah, this is at least not how we start. At some point, obviously, we are connecting systems, et cetera, and then we involve the IT department. But at least you can start immediately. You can see, does it work for me? Does it really solve my problem? And then after the pilot, you can then decide. And then just to finish this off with Vitra, what we are now doing is coming back to the current like ongoing crisis and increasing prices that you see in the market. We even managed by tendering their business into our carrier base, again, like directly to the carriers. We managed, instead of a price increase for Vitra, to keep it stable, if not slightly lower. I mean, like we almost got a 20% cost, like potential cost saving, if you want, to the current providers just by building out a larger network for them and really enabling them to work with smaller carriers, something even the big guys are not capable of doing.
That's amazing. You know, kind of giving an option to be a strategic sourcing partner. I think that's amazing. And how labor intensive it is for you to provide that for a new client?
I mean, for transport management, there are obviously different people involved. Like as a start, I mean, sales, let's maybe keep this out because that's quite obvious. But then we have an implementation team working on ramping up the business. That's typically a team really depending on the customer size, right? Like our target customer right now is typically a mid-sized shipper that has some, I don't know, like 8 to 20 million or so of overland freight spend. Mm-hmm. And a team size and then typically like 2 to 3 people who are working on this in order to like obviously talk to the customer, explain how the system works, which is quite self-explaining, but still obviously you want to have someone helping you like with your first steps. Second, we have someone being responsible to onboard the suppliers because oftentimes we start in an inbound setup. So we reach out to the suppliers together with our customers and say like, look, this is a pilot that we're operating. This is your role in this. This is what's going to change. It's going to be easier for you at the end of the day. So we have person being responsible for this. And the third person then is responsible for onboarding the LSPs or the carriers, depending on like whom they work with, which could be anything from data integration. It also depends whether we worked with this particular LSP before, but at least we onboard the suppliers and the carriers both. And then once the business is up and running, again, obviously depending on the size of the business, but I mean, for a customer of like 8 million or so with, let's say, half of the freight spend going into FTL, we typically have a team of 2 to 3 people operating this on a daily basis. And that also includes finding, I mean, not only running this with fixed freight forwarders, meaning on this lane, it always goes to LSP XYZ, but also doing spot business. And this is, I think, something where a lot of shippers struggle a lot with, in particular in uncertain times like those that we have right now, because at the end of the day, they have to give business to the freight forwarders and are typically not capable of working directly with the carriers, simply because of the processes shippers have today does not really allow them to work with like hundreds and thousands of carriers directly. I mean, if you take, I don't know, an IKEA or so, I think they're running their business with around 100 freight forwarders plus minus for Europe, but there are 770,000 trucking companies out there. But compliance, the processes, the tool sets they have, it's just way too costly for them to vet and onboard a carrier into their system, cost them a couple of hundred euros. So the same, like potential savings you have by going to the spot market, it's just doesn't fly. With us, it does. So then it starts making economic sense. And yeah, this is typically done by a team, as I said, of like 2 to 3 people.
Oh, thanks for sharing that. Now just talking about, let's say Vitra in mind, and let's talk about sustainability in it. How do you really help them identify how they can kind of reduce their green emission? And is there a way where you can kind of highlight that these are the things they can do to, you know, be more environmental friendly?
Yeah. I mean, there are two parts of an answer to this, as we are having the freight forwarding part and the transport management part. As a transport management partner, since we are overseeing the entire freight spend of a customer, obviously, we are looking into, okay, so how can we combine loads in order to reduce empty mileage? And this is the key difference here also to other 4PL players that you might see out there. We do not stop at this particular customer, but we look at all the customers that we have and try to combine business. And if you do this on a digital platform, this is just way more efficient, like one unified data lake. It is just way more efficient than doing this in like silos per customer. So this is in order to reduce empty mileage by combining loads smarter, by changing schedules, et cetera. So this is one thing. The second thing is, and this is also what we then do in freight forwarding, that we try to find alternative trucking solutions. It could be anything from, I mean, electric is not really there yet, to be fair. I think it's just way too slow, which is quite sad. This might be one of the driving forces that diesel prices go up like crazy right now. I mean, obviously, that sends a certain incentive for people to invest more in alternative solutions here. It could be LNG. But what we do right now, and I think this is the solution that is available right now to most parties, is actually intermodal. So we're running quite a lot of loads via rail, building intermodal solutions for our customers, like in particular long distance, obviously. So we have like super regular trains running out of Germany into Italy, just like to name one example. So this is providing alternative solutions, traditional road and like Euro 6 trucking. The thing is, it is not that easy to find truckers. I mean, let's keep intermodal aside, but to find truckers that already have a fleet of LNG trucks, for example, and also understand where they're operating. So, and this is really where our strength lies, right? I mean, the network that we have is already quite expansive. And at the same time, we collect information on the fleet composition. Fleet composition means like, okay, is it a 40-ton truck, et cetera? But it also includes what is the engine this particular truck is running on. We're also having discussions with these guys, like, what are your plans for the future? Are you planning to invest into more sustainable trucking solutions? And this is one part of the market. So that's on the carrier side. And if we then find out on the shipper side that sustainability is important and eventually there is a willingness to pay, because, I mean, it might be for some time at least a bit more expensive, then we connect the two. And then we find solutions. I mean, one of the solutions that we've built in the past is connecting for the pre and post carriage. I think it's LNG trucks, if I remember correctly, with an intermodal solution. So I think this is the almost lowest as you can get right now. So really building sustainable solutions here. The first part is measuring the current impact, what we do in transport management. So we understand what's the distance, what is the loading weight, et cetera, in order to calculate the CO2 footprint of our customers. And then two is what I just said before. We find alternative solutions. We change schedules, et cetera. And then three, for whatever remains, we help the customer to offset. So there's always these three steps, measure, reduce, offset, that we are helping our customers with. And for freight forwarding, finding solutions and offset is typically what we do. The measuring part, yes, we can say if we are 1 out of 10 providers, how much have we emissioned? But obviously, we don't know for the others. In transport management, we know it for the entire freightsman of a customer.
And does your SLA has part where it says that you also have to work on providing sustainability solutions for them, or that's just one of their service you provide, but it's not part of the SLA between the shipper and intra freight?
We increasingly see that this becomes a major topic on their agenda. I mean, it's not anymore just coming out of the ESG department or so, but like really a management topic. And so people start reaching out to us, hearing us on conferences, et cetera, like when we really dive into the details there, if we can also help them. Because like typically customers that we are working with, like in particular in like the mid-sized shipper segment, they are struggling with, first of all, finding out like what transportation cost did I have? What is the performance of my carrier? Not even talking about sustainability, right? So this right now just adds on top of everything else they have. And so they're actually very open to have a partner alongside that I think does have quite a few capabilities in order to answer most of those questions.
You know, most companies now have like at least your 5 years plan on their annual report says that they're going to reduce their carbon footprint. So now I think people in shipper side who are basically procuring logistics, I think one of the biggest agenda they have from their CEOs or COOs is reducing footprint. So I'm assuming that, you know, they'll be talking more while kind of...
And this will become like, again, a major topic. I think right now, the sustainability topic is maybe not the highest priority anymore, given current circumstances. Price, yeah. It's price, but it's also, I would even argue it's less price. I think it's finding a reliable partner that is really providing tracking capacity, because quite frankly, it is way more pricey if you don't get your stuff delivered, let it be on your inbound or outbound, doesn't matter, than paying €20 more for a load. I mean, I agree with the current price increases. That is also quite heavy. But I think right now it's finding capacity, finding it still for reasonable cost, of course, and then sustainability. But sustainability will move up the hierarchy again once the market becomes a bit more stable, pretty sure.
That's amazing you're talking about this, because I don't think so this part of the world would understand that Europe has inland freight issues on delivering. You know, there is a supply chain crisis. I've written a lot of articles recently as well, what's happening globally, especially on the ocean freights and how the things are moving. But so just if you can kind of tell us what is the landscape right now in the land transportation and why it's not being delivered? What are the challenges you are facing that the, you know, trucks are not being delivered from A to B?
there is a massive shortage of trucking capacity. And there are multiple reasons for this. One for sure, but this has been around for a while, is a lack of drivers. I mean, driving a truck is not necessarily the most attractive job. In Germany, for example, we had some, I think 20 years ago it was, the major source for new drivers were actually the military service. So every male in Germany had to go through the military service. And like some of them also did their trucking license, not because they wanted to become a trucking driver, but at least that became an option that you can become a truck driver. So this was a big hit for sure. The second part around drivers is that right now, given the current crisis with Ukraine, that around 25 to 30% of the truck drivers from Poland, from Polish trucking companies, and Poland is one of the major sources for carrier companies, 25 to 30% of those truck drivers are actually from Belarus or Ukraine. They don't work right now, or at least go back home. At least there's again another hit on the supply of truck drivers, if you want. And then there are new restrictions, which I'm not sure if you are familiar with this, but it's called the mobility package over here. I won't dive into too much detail, but what it says at the end of the day, that given that Europe is not one country, but like quite a few countries with borders, there's a regulation in place that you cannot run unlimited within a certain country if you are from another country. So before it was like up to 3 runs you can do within a country, then you have to leave the country again. I mean, assuming someone comes from Poland, they go to Germany, do 3 runs, they have to leave again. Now they've brought it down to 1 run within a country and then you have to leave again. So effectively what you're doing, you're destroying additional carrier capacity going around Europe. I'm pretty sure that the EU government is going to understand this as well very soon. They are about to implement this. I mean, as we speak, it is right now happening in a step-by-step process. But all of this is leading to a supply shortage on the carrier side. And then making sure that the trucking capacity that is available as efficient as possible, and that we, all of us, manage to reduce empty mileage, this is really what is driving the European economy right now. As we see it like left, right, center, if supply chains are not resilient anymore, if things break down, I mean, anything from COVID to like a container ship getting stuck in some channel, all of this are disruptions where then suddenly trucking becomes super relevant. I mean, in 2020, we suddenly started trucking from Shenzhen to Europe. That's like almost 20,000 kilometers. So this is absolutely insane. And this really shows that like so much going on in order to get stuff in particular out of China. I mean, anything outbound into Europe really
is. So assuming it
really
was China, Russia, Ukraine, but that route is gone now. So basically
that route is gone to a certain extent. As we also do rail, I mean, we do anything overland, including rail.
Right.
I said like some 10 minutes ago that we are doing Europe. So China is not exactly part of Europe. But obviously, like as a logistics service provider, you try to help your customers. And as we build up a network that also includes carriers that are operating the rail, like from China to Europe and back, we started helping customers there as well. And the rail, the Silk Road, is still active. And given that, I mean, I don't really have this glass ball for the future, but my personal hypothesis is that Russia is not going to cut this off, because at the end of the day, they're also cutting off the relationship with China if they cut off the Silk Road. So my hypothesis is it's going to stay. It's actually going to grow. If air freight is having troubles, I mean, right now you can't cross China Russia via air. So the Silk Road, I think, will increase in importance over the next couple of months.
That's a very good point. Thank you for sharing that. You know, my next question is about kind of the landscape of the future. But again, you know, we don't even know what's going to happen tomorrow. But with the vision of the company, where do you think, you know, 5 and 10 years down the line, where the company is going to be and how the Logitech world is going to look like?
Well, I mean, from my point of view, the market in Europe or like globally, but now talking about Europe, is not a winner takes it all market. So we see different solutions for different parts of the supply chain. If we talk about transportation, obviously we have the different modes of transportation, sea, air, rail, road, etc. So my hypothesis is that you're going to see platforms for each and every one of those modes. You're going to see platforms connecting those modes, and you're going to see multiple of them. Let's take trucking for an example. If you look into the US, there's at least a handful, if not more, of fairly large platforms that have started like operating a few years ago. Let it be a Convoy, let it be Uber Freight, who recently bought Transplace, or like last year bought Transplace. So you're going to see quite a few of those platforms eventually being connected. Because at the end of the day, you as a shipper, you would not give all your volumes in a B2B environment, not all your volumes into one provider, because essentially become dependent on them. So you always would like spread it, at least if you are of a certain size. So that by definition means you're going to have multiple platforms. Those platforms, as I said, I'm pretty sure are going to be connected. Let it be Roadflug platforms being connected to platforms above that are orchestrating several different modes of transportation. And yeah, I think this is how future is going to look like, and that you have multiple platforms working with each other, then providing digital solutions really depending on the requirements of the customer supply chain. I mean, if we have a customer that is asking us, okay, we have business going out of whatever, South America into Europe, well, then it's not us solving it. I mean, there's no road to go there. So we have to partner up. This is what you're going to see over the next couple of years.
And with InstaFit Vision, is there more product line going to come in, or are you going to just grow as a region? Or I don't know if you're how open you are with sharing the future, but we'd love to understand where normally this kind of company grows into in future.
Look, I mean, we want to build the most efficient transport solution in Europe for overland. So, and we are then happy partnering with whatever is required. But we want to build a really big network of carrier companies working very frequently with us, where we provide really the loads where and when they need, like pay them properly, et cetera, so that this carrier base really grows. And then connecting them with shippers in very different ways. Sometimes because we are the freight forwarding partner to a customer, because the customer wants to work with freight forwarders and not with a digital player for everything. That's perfectly fine. So we are then the road freight forwarder making use of this carrier network. I'm pretty sure we're going to see way more often going forward is that we are the software layer for customers to work on. Could be that we are as a managed service provider in there, managed transportation for PL, or that they're simply accessing our carrier base via the software and basically work on this themselves. But our target market for doing this is, as I said, like more the mid-sized markets. We do have some really large customers out there who are also having very high interest in working with us in transport management. But then we typically start with like smaller pilots first, and in particular work on the spot problem of those customers, because honestly, there is no solution out there right now. So we're having quite a few discussions along those lines. I'm very happy to pick up any discussions with shippers who are facing the same challenges. Very happy to
I assure you, after the podcast is broadcasted, you will have a lot of those people reaching out to you. As I do expect a lot of LinkedIn connection and LinkedIn messages. Just out of curiosity, is InstaFreight are you investing in assets like trucking yourself at the moment? Does 40 million goes into buying a lot of trucks and competing with few of the local partners at all? Or is that something not in the books at all?
We do operate an own fleet, but with own fleet, we don't have own assets. So we have a charter fleet of a few hundred trucks that we are operating on major trade lanes as a freight forwarder. But this is, as I said, like only a small chunk of our business. We will remain asset free. We are honestly not the best managing drivers, making sure that stuff then like in the day-to-day physical activity really happens as it should. I mean, this is where we clearly need partners. And this is also why we are highly dependent on carrier companies, and I really look at them, and we also call them partners, because we are at the end of the day together solving the customer's problems and providing a great customer experience. So we are like fully dependent on those guys. Our strength lies in providing the digital solution and connecting the two. So we will stay in this part. And that also means that the investment that we've done obviously goes into further developing the software. So we're going to almost triple our engineering team until end of year. We will also invest heavily into expanding into different geographies within Europe in order to be always very close to the customer. I mean, our philosophy is centralized operations and be very close to the customer, talk to the customer, sometimes even having people on site. This is our philosophy. And this is where the funding is going to go. So for those people who wonder how come that startups don't earn money, because we invest in technology that's going to give us the competitive edge going forward.
And a lot of people should understand that now tech and people in tech are way costlier than people in operations. So the money burns faster.
And this for sure is not going to change.
Yeah, I don't think so. And, knowing what you know now, going back in time, what would you have done differently when you started this business?
Honestly, we've done so many mistakes. It's very hard to remember where to start. But I think like all in all, we are extremely happy where we are today with the team that we've had. Because at the end of the day, I think this is like investing in the right people very early on is, I think, the most crucial thing that you can possibly do. I mean, we went out for dinner last night with another startup which are like very early. There are like two people sitting there. And they were also asking us almost the same question. So what do you think we really have to work on in order to get this off the ground? Invest in the right people. And like us as a management team, we went through like all these different cycles that you have as a startup or right now as a scale up, from like everyone does everything to a certain extent. I mean, I've never done software development because that would have been a fail for sure. Then you start like at a certain team size, you start building up hierarchies. You start building up getting additional people in who are just way better at the job that they are doing than you are yourself. And right now with 200 people, I would love to know the name of everyone. I'm just very bad at remembering names. So right now we are really at the point where we fully rely on our management team. And I think this is something we could have done earlier, investing more into people. Like for us, the focus was as well growing capital efficiently. And yeah, this sometimes limits you a little bit. But what we've built so far, at least I can say that we're very proud of this.
Awesome. Let's talk more about people and the kind of skills. So first of all, what skills are required to be successful, especially in InstaFreight?
Yeah. So in InstaFreight, we basically have three different profiles that we hire. One for sure, logistics professionals. So they really need to understand the business. They really like typically have a background, obviously, having worked at traditional freight forwarding companies before or any logistics related company before. And we hired those guys very early and we are still hiring them. And I would say that around half the people at InstaFreight do have a logistics background. The second, what we call specialists. So people that do have work experience, but from a completely different field. I don't know it for sure, but I would argue that pretty much no one in our software engineering team has a logistics background, and that's maybe a good thing. So they bring in expertise that really help us to build the company that we are, and that it, like in particular, I think holds true for technology. And then three, those guys whom we call young guns, so people dropping straight out of university, maybe have done their first job or so, but those young driven ones who really challenge how things are being done by, let's say, like more traditional players or by more traditional mindsets that we also have in the company. And we see of this diversity, we see this as a tremendous advantage, because if you put these three profiles in a room, you typically get amazing solutions that eventually no one has thought of before. And this is what we truly believe, that this gives us the edge over more traditional companies. One, obviously, because we don't have the legacy, at the same time, the competence and also the willingness to shape the future. I think for the logistics people, and as I said, like we're hiring quite a few of them, the key challenge is people who are very successful in the companies that are right now working in are not necessarily successful in startups or scale-ups, simply because the environment and the infrastructure, the processes, they need to be built. They're not there yet. So you can't just like orchestrate and manage the machine, but you have to build the machine. And this is something in terms of mindset is, I think, the key difference. And this also comes with like, what culture did you grow up in? This is what we typically observe.
So I know your background does not have a strong supply chain. And how many more founders are there?
It's actually three of us. So we have one guy, Max, who has a logistics background. He worked in the Korea Express parcel part for actually quite a while at TNT Express. And then moved on to Russia, worked at La Moda, which is a Russian e-commerce. Very similar to Zalando. I mean, because Zalando, I mean, you're actually like in Russia, you're more close to Asia. So La Moda might actually ring a bell.
Yeah.
And he set up the last mile delivery there, doing this with their own fleet, if you want. So setting up a business doing around 20,000 shipments a day, which is quite big. And the third guy in the room is Marcus, who has a tech background. I got to know him while being around Rocket Internet. Rocket Internet is one of the big corporate incubators. Yeah. Exactly. Exactly. And Marcus was actually part of the team over there. He built in total around 150 companies, which sounds absolutely insane. And it is actually like on a global scale with his team. And back then, I mean, he joined then slightly later in 2017 and brought in the entire tech team that he's been working with, brought them on our payroll. And yeah, ever since he's been part of the founding team.
That's amazing.
So it's three of us.
That's awesome. What's the culture right now? And, you know, how are you kind of keeping the culture same when you are global, everybody's sitting quite far?
Again, a very, very good question. Right now, we're actually having a discussion around leadership principles and around values, because back in 2016, 2017, we developed values together with the team. It was actually really a bottom-up exercise over a couple of weeks. So what are the values that we want to live by? And I mean, it's hard to say, but I think values do change over time because also the company develops, obviously. Yeah. So right now, like literally as we speak, we are working on those values and also include them, for example, more into our hiring process. At the end of the day, just looking at the hard skills and sometimes soft skills of people is just not enough. But if you want to build a company where everyone is like super motivated and really has this clear vision in front of them and is like willing to go the extra mile, you have to have a culture that is enabling you to do so. So this is something that we are actively working on. And it is not easy in the environment that we are in right now. I mean, part of this culture and the leadership principles that we're looking into is, I mean, one thing is for sure, not everyone is going to go back into the office full time.
Definitely, yeah.
The thing hybrid. Is it going to be a hybrid model? And this is right now what we were discussing. Is it a hybrid model? And right now, this is what we've said, right? So 2 days a week in the office, 3 days home office, or are we going to do remote only or remote first? There are ups and downs to this. We haven't solved this yet, to be fair. I don't want to spoil it for our people who might be listening, like our employees. So we don't know yet, to be honest. So right now it's still the 2-3 logic, but there is so much talent out there that can work remotely. But one thing that actually quite a few things, but one key thing we are not sure about is what influence is it going to have long-term on your culture? Because right now it's because of the pandemic, but are there really people who want to work entirely remotely for the next 5 to 10 years, or are they suddenly going to wake up in the morning and say, look, what am I doing? I want to go to an office, but if then the Instafit office is not close by, well, then we again have an issue. So the tendency is towards the hybrid model.
Yeah. For when I say hybrid model, I don't think so. The hybrid model is really based on, you know, the kind of employees, but I think employers should adapt where, you know, if employer wants to come to office, they can, if not, they're not. There's certain challenges around real estate and management of it. But I think a lot of people now are very productive, either if, you know, an introvert is more productive at home, extrovert is more productive in office, and you want, the idea for you is to get more productivity, right? So it doesn't matter. So you have to, as a company owner, you have to adapt a hybrid model in the sense candidates wish wherever they want. And this is my opinion comes from after a lot speaking to so many candidates, and, you know, everybody's different. They're like, oh, they hate being at home because, you know, they have a lot of kids and they have pets and they just can't work. And then there are people who are like, oh, they're so happy being at home. You know, they can spend time with family and, you know, they're able to work. They don't have to constantly work, you know, at a stretch, but they can kind of divide that work number of hours, but still the productivity is high. So, and that's why my opinion is that, you know, companies should adopt that hybrid model as themselves, that, you know, let candidates decide.
Yeah, I could completely second this. I mean, one thing that for sure we're going to miss then to a certain extent is we have like every Friday at 5 p.m. we have something called the all hands and drinks. Exactly. I mean, we still have quite a few people around, but I think this is also quite an essential part of our culture. So we'd really miss it if not everyone at least has the chance to show up.
Awesome. With you, you are based in Poland right now, right?
I'm actually based in Berlin.
You're based in Berlin. Okay. All right. And that's where your majority of employees are, right?
Yes. So we are 150, 60 or so over here. And then some smaller satellite offices.
All right. Philip, why don't you take some time and talk directly to our audience about Instafit?
Yes. Look, I think it became at least like the key points of what we're doing became clear over the podcast, I hope. But for sure, what I want to do is pick up the dialogue with you guys and understand better how you work in the current environment. I mean, logistics and transport logistics in particular is going through significant change given all the forces in the market right now. And I would like to understand better how you're dealing with them. We are actually having very good dialogues and I would say quite happy customers. I'm happy to interview you too as well. In particular, where we work in this transport management setup and help them digitize how they work with their carriers or LSPs, like really bringing up efficiencies, reducing costs, bringing up visibility a lot, which is crucial in these days. Then two, and this is again coming to the resilience point, enabling them to build and manage their own network. With network, I mean, obviously carrier companies, really giving access to our carrier base, a vetted carrier base, really making sure the trucks are reliable, they do arrive on time, and that you are working directly with the carriers. Still Instafreight, always being the contractual party, but this has so many advantages when it comes to your own processes. You only have to go via one party, which is us. We are a neutral party, which is like anything around you being compliant with your processes. I could talk for 10 minutes about this, but this is definitely a very big point. So build and manage your own network. And then three, at the end of the day, data is an absolute key in making sure that you can take smart decisions based on data. I mean, producing data is one thing, but really understanding what is the essence in there and distilling this down to what really matters. This is what we are, or we think we are, really good at. So if you have the time, do ping us on LinkedIn or do ping me on LinkedIn. Very happy to pick up the dialogue. So if you are doing transportation within Europe, I think we should definitely have a call.
Philip, again, thank you so much for your time. Really appreciate this discussion today. And again, I wish you and Instrapid all the success in the world. We will have your LinkedIn profile tagged in the transcript. So thank you for that. Thank you. And Philip, thank you again.
Thank you, Rushit. Thanks for having us.
Thank you for listening to our podcast. For all the show notes and information discussed in the episode, please follow elcotglobal.com/podcast. Also, if you found this interesting, please subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, or any of the podcast platforms. We are looking forward to your feedback. Thank you so much.